this morning. She's going to continue on our conversation on how rural regions elsewhere have revitalized their economies and tie that back also to what's happening here on the Great Northern Peninsula. Dr. Hall, I've worked with for a number of years now, how many, I'm not sure, but she did her PhD at Queen's on rural development and regional development in Northern Ontario. She's been done a postdoc here at Memorial, leading the Advancing Innovation in Newfoundland and Labrador project, which was a great effort over a year, working on looking at innovation in the province, including this region. So we had workshop on innovation in Plum Point with that project. She went from there to Saskatchewan and has done a lot of work in northern regions in Canada and internationally on innovation in northern economies. And she's here to tell us a little bit more about that.
Thank you, Kelly, and it's great to be back in Newfoundland and on the Northern Peninsula. And I want to build on the conversations that were started by Ken and Jackie yesterday and continued by all of you in the discussion sessions. And it's based on my experience, as Kelly mentioned, leading the Advancing Innovation Newfoundland and Labrador project with Ken and Kelly and Rob Greenwood and Jackie, but also my work as the co-lead of a thematic network that's looking at the commercialization of science and technology for the North. I hope to provide some examples of an innovation approach that is being used in the European Union and the United Kingdom. It's a bit higher level, more of a policy approach, but then share a story of survival from Norway and some insights that we can draw on to help foster innovation and sustainability. So our journey this morning starts with that approach that has captured the attention of policymakers across the European Union and the United Kingdom, and it's called Research and Innovation Strategies for Smart Specialization. It's a mouthful, so I'll simply refer to it as Smart Specialization. And my interest in this approach really stems from the findings of that Advancing Innovation project, where the lack of an innovation strategy was a major topic of discussion at many of our workshops and our innovation summit. Smart specialization was just emerging as a new approach when we were doing the Advancing Innovation project. And at its simplest, it's a regional development strategy that identifies priorities that will support and grow entrepreneurship and innovation in a particular region. And it emerges from regional innovation systems thinking, which emphasizes the importance of the region as a key site for innovation to really thrive. And the social nature of innovation. So Jackie talked about this yesterday. It means that our entrepreneurs aren't out there doing this alone. There's a wide variety of stakeholders who are involved in that innovation or entrepreneurship ecosystem. And it merges this thinking from regional innovation systems with place-based development strategies. And these really focus on the key assets, needs, and priorities in a region. So RIS3, or Smart Specialization Strategies, really build on those unique regional assets, competitive advantages, and potential for excellence. But you also want to be thinking about related variety. And this simply means that you take what you're good at and see if there's other areas where that expertise can be utilized. And the fisheries speaker yesterday really provided a great example of this in Iceland, where they're taking all of that traditional waste product from the cod fishery and using that to create things like fish leather. And I've been to Iceland and I've seen the products that they're making out of fish leather, and it's absolutely stunning, and it's really something we could do here. The smart specialization approach also engages stakeholders and encourages innovation, taking risks, and experimentation. It's evidence-based, and monitoring and evaluation is a key part of that, and we'll come back to that in a minute. It also has a broad view of innovation. I think oftentimes, and we saw this time and time again at the innovation workshops, when we talk about innovation, people think it's product invention and high tech. But that's not what innovation is. It's not just about that. It can happen in any firm, in any sector, and in all aspects of a firm's operations. And it can also be social innovation, and the smart specialization strategies recognize that. It also wants key stakeholders to pick those priorities so that it can focus our investment and our policy supports more strategically on those key priorities. Central to smart specialization are entrepreneurs. They're really at the heart of the approach because they're in the best position to really discover new areas of research and development, innovation, and those competitive advantages in a region. And so this entrepreneurial discovery process really utilizes entrepreneurial knowledge in a region, but it also has all of us as participants, perhaps from government or knowledge institutions or various industry associations, also think like an entrepreneur. And what this means is that we focus on market opportunities, how we differentiate ourselves from others, how we can take and manage risks, and seeking out alliances to optimize the access and use of our resources. It also includes all types of innovation stakeholders in the process, from our businesses and entrepreneurs to our universities and colleges to investors and civil society. So it's a very collaborative approach in trying to build a strategy for a region. So this is what it looks like. It's a really simple six-step process. The first step is that you analyze your regional context and your potential for innovation. So this is where you're really trying to identify those regional assets and also some of the needs or challenges that might get in the way of realizing that potential. In the second step, you're setting up an inclusive governance structure that can help own and manage and implement the strategy once you've created it. The third step is to create that shared vision for the region. The fourth is really key, is to identify a small number of priorities. Oftentimes, I think we have a really long shopping list of things we'd love to see, but in a lot of the strategies that are being designed and implemented across Europe right now, they have three priorities to begin with so that they can achieve them and they can really focus those efforts. The fifth, which I think is one of the most important, is defining the appropriate policies, a roadmap, and an effective action plan. I think this is where we often fall short across Canada when we're developing regional development plans or strategies. We forget that we have to identify who's going to lead this, and how are we then going to monitor and evaluate to ensure that what we wanted to do is actually happening, and if it's not, why isn't it happening? So there's that monitoring and evaluation mechanism that's built into that sixth step. So early strategies that were being developed across the EU and the UK were often focused on nations as regions. But fortunately, because they are a few years in now, we're starting to see them being designed and implemented in more rural, or what the EU refers to as sparsely populated regions. So the green regions are some of the examples here that we're seeing strategies being designed in. And there's some emerging lessons that are coming out of those strategies in those regions. And the first is a lack of critical mass. And we've talked about this a few times over the last couple of days and how that lack of critical mass can really hamper entrepreneurial behavior. And that's because oftentimes our entrepreneurs or companies in rural and northern regions, they have smaller markets that they're working with, sometimes more limited choices in terms of potential partners they can work with or how they can pool their knowledge. And they also have fewer investors who are willing to take a risk to actually invest in companies. In northern and rural regions, we often see large international companies tied to resource development, and a lot of smaller business, oftentimes service businesses, but we lack those mid-range innovative firms. And what we heard time and time again in the innovation workshops was that people owning and operating small businesses in more rural northern places across Newfoundland and Labrador were too busy working in the business to be able to take a step back and work on the business or think about what they could do to increase innovation in their own company. They've also discovered that the successful implementation of a smart specialization strategy, especially in a more rural and northern context, is really promoted by the presence of having effective intermediary organizations. And they really facilitate that relationship between entrepreneurs and the policy world. And we certainly heard this in the workshops across Newfoundland and Labrador. But there's been a lot of changes over the last few years, and a lot of these key organizations either no longer exist or they have different roles. And so we do really need to think about that and what kind of regional institutions or governance structures we need to advance innovation here. We also know that a large share of our innovation exchanges occur in close geographical proximity. So if you've heard the term cluster, that's what it's arguing. But at the same time, it needs to be boosted by external knowledge. So Ken mentioned it yesterday. It's this idea of local buzz, global pipelines. And what this means for regions is that they need to be cautious of getting locked into a particular way of doing things. We need to be constantly learning to ensure that our communities remain sustainable. So finding lessons from elsewhere, seeing if it'll work here, taking that risk, it's okay. Finally, we need to ensure that we're moving innovation outside our university and college towns to include the rest of the region they are a part of. And we're seeing that here today with Grenfell campus coming up to St. Anthony and having this workshop. So we're doing that already in Newfoundland and Labrador. So what about smart specialization here in the province? I'm extremely optimistic with the recent release of the provincial government's The Way Forward document, which states that they will implement regional innovation pilot projects. And I think this is a real opportunity to be innovative here in the province with our policy development and be the first jurisdiction in North America to pilot this approach. I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from it, and I think it's definitely worth a try in trying to see what value we can gain from it. So given the results of the population project and the stories that have been in the media over the last couple of weeks, I wanted to shift gears a little bit and share a story about a community in northern Norway that has survived after experiencing very similar circumstances to communities here on the Northern Peninsula, but also across the province. And it highlights the importance of collective action, the need to be bold and take risks sometimes, and the importance of building on those local and regional assets. And so that community is Bugøynes, Norway, and this is a picture of it, which doesn't look too much different from some of the communities here in Newfoundland and Labrador. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the community, it's right up there, north of the Arctic Circle, population of 230 people, and in the 1980s, they experienced a crisis in their cod fishery. Sound familiar? It was caused by a number of factors, and throughout the 80s, their population declined by 18%. A local action committee was created, and they took a very bold approach to get the attention of policymakers and investors in Oslo. In 1989, they placed an ad in a leading newspaper in Oslo with a simple headline, "Will someone accept us?" And I'm just going to grab the ad out of my bag to read it out to you. So this is what the ad said. Is there a place in Norway that will welcome an increase in population of about 300 people? We ask as citizens of the fishing community, Bugøynes and Eastern Finnmark, who are now fed up. The last few years have been a constant struggle to maintain the settlement. The reason is a fisheries policy that failed, among other things. It led to the bankruptcy of the fish plant, our cornerstone firm, in 1987. In the 2 years since then, no one has been able to get the plant started again. This is because of bureaucratic clutter and a lack of will among bureaucrats and politicians. In fact, they are still arguing about who owns the plant. Now we feel it is time to put everything behind us and start again somewhere else. We want to avoid becoming burned out and worn out in our struggle for existence for no purpose. We want to use our strength in a community where we can work for a future for ourselves and our children. We want to move together as a group. Solidarity among the people of Bugøynes is strong. The adult part of the population has a mixed professional background. With our competence and go-ahead spirit, we have much to give. We would be bringing 50 children. We are interested in moving south of Trøndelag. Even if there are difficulties in providing jobs there too, we won't let that scare us. We can help in creating new jobs. Correspondence should be sent to Action Bugøynes. And so what this ended up doing was creating a lot of international attention. And the media went up to the region. It also sparked an increase in tourism because people were wanting to see what is this community that put out the ad in an Oslo newspaper. And it also caused the government to step in and see what was being done. So since that time, they've had their ups and downs, but the community is now a leader in catching and selling live king crab through innovative solutions that are bringing their product from fishermen to plate. They have a facility in Buchanan, which is where the fishery is located, and then a crab hotel in Oslo, where the crabs are trucked to be flown all over the world. And some of my former students here, if you can see the photos down at the bottom at the University of Saskatchewan, we would visit this site as part of a field school and learning about what other northern regions are doing to advance economic development. And the map is a little dark in the middle, but you can see all the red dots are everywhere that the king crab are flowing are throughout the world. And one of the things I really like about this company is that they're integrating technology, research, and development into their approach. So when you get a king crab from the facility, it comes with the little barcode. And you can either scan it or go online and input the number. And the first thing that pops up is information about your specific crab. So it tells you that this was a medium-sized crab that weighed between 2 and 2.5 pounds. Oops. The next slide then introduces you to your fisherman. And this is Edgar. Apparently, he is a keen hunter, and he also likes to dance and sing to ABBA in his spare time. And you can watch a video about Edgar, who tells you all about what he does in Buchanan and his role in the fishery. The next slide then tells you your catch site. And so it really builds that connection between your buyers and your consumers with the producers and where this product is coming from. And it really capitalizes on that local food movement, people wanting to know where their food is coming from, and builds that relationship now between all of those places all over the world that are getting crab from Buchanan and where it's being fished from. So what does the story from Buchanan and smart specialization mean for rural innovation and sustainability here in Newfoundland and Labrador? Well, I think there are four key insights. The first is that we need to build on local and regional assets, and this shouldn't come as a surprise. It's been a theme over the last couple of days. Several people have mentioned it throughout their presentations. We also need to think about regionalism as a surrogate for critical mass, and I'm going to go into a bit more detail on each of these in a minute. The third is that we need to foster that culture of innovation and entrepreneurship that Jackie was talking about yesterday. And finally, we need all hands on deck. So from Luleå in the Arctic region of Sweden that has harnessed its cold air to become the node pole to cool down large data servers for Facebook, rather than using energy to do so, they convinced Facebook to set up their data servers there, and it pumps in cold air, so it's more environmentally friendly. No one would ever have thought that you could do this in the Arctic. To Elliott Lake in northern Ontario, which after the collapse of the uranium industry, used its natural amenities, the beauty of the lakes and the forests, and their housing stock to become a retirement destination where people can afford to retire. Or Kirkenes in northern Norway, which is about the same size as St. Anthony. They're capitalizing on their winter, their 24-hour days of darkness, to build unique winter tourism opportunities and experiences, including a snow hotel. And so that's it there. And this is from inside the snow hotel bar, if you can see it. And they do beautiful carving competitions every year that attract international carvers who come in and do all the designs throughout the hotel. And they also have a lot of partnerships with the king crab industry and run what they call king crab safaris, where people can go out, catch a king crab, learn how to get it ready for cooking, and then go and cook it over a fire and eat it and enjoy it. What all these communities all share in common is that they're building on their local assets or regional assets. And a number of people raised this point on Wednesday evening and yesterday. It's way too easy to focus on our deficiencies or our challenges. Let's try and shift that conversation to recognizing our assets, what sets us apart, and how we can market those assets and turn them into capital. And there was a project that Kelly led a few years back, which did identify all the different types of local and regional assets here in the Northern Peninsula. And there were several different categories, and I've listed a few of them up here. And if we have some time at the end of the presentation, we can perhaps come back to it and maybe think of what you feel are the key assets here that set the Northern Peninsula apart. The second lesson is that we need to start acting regionally, and we've heard this over the last couple of days, but we really are too small and remote to do it alone, given the current fiscal, demographic, economic, and political realities we face. And there are a variety of informal and formal ways we can act regionally. And I'm going to leave this up to Ryan, who's speaking right after me, to discuss kind of governance approaches that can be used in a regional setting. But I do want to share a story from Northern Ontario, which is where I'm from. I was doing some research looking at regional development there, and I was discussing a regional initiative where a local mayor saw five mayors come together who, in some instances, their communities were located over 1,000 kilometers apart. So huge distances separated them. But they came together to lobby the provincial government on an issue that they felt was very important. And when I asked them why they decided to work together, when oftentimes they compete, and they can compete quite aggressively, he said the following thing to me. If you took a pencil in your hand and you snapped it, it's easy. But if you put five pencils in your hand, you can't break that. And I really want you to think about that. Oftentimes when we talk about acting regionally, people get defensive of what they might lose. And I really think we need to shift the conversation to what we actually gain by doing so. And in this case, they felt there were strength in numbers by working together on this common effort. So going to the fourth point, I think we need to do a much better job of fostering a culture of innovation and entrepreneurship. We need to discuss failures, we need to celebrate successes, and we need more mentorship from established entrepreneurs and business owners for the next generation. When someone comes up with a new idea or an approach in the region, do we say that's a great idea, or do we say that will never work here? What are community leaders and organizations doing to support entrepreneurship in the region? What about a pitch competition to come up with new business ideas that could help solve some of the gaps that we've been identifying over the last couple of days, like perhaps a microbrew pub for the tourism and local? A large part of this is engaging people much earlier in life, and it broke my heart to see the story on the CBC last week about the youth exodus. What are we doing to teach kids in K-12 about the opportunities in their regional economies? Are we showing them that there are great opportunities here that they can come back to once they go off in the world, as they should, and gain experiences from elsewhere? Will they go away, and will they be the community ambassadors and tell people about the great opportunities that exist back home in their region? Or will they tell people it was a great place to live, but there are no jobs? Louise and I were chatting after the youth panel on Wednesday night about how maybe we should think about creating a fab lab space. And for those of you who aren't familiar, these are fabrication labs, oftentimes with a 3D printer and a few other tools, to get people thinking about how they can create things in a particular region. We have an amazing space at the University of Waterloo that serves as a cafeteria, a fab lab, and there's also individuals located in there throughout the day who can provide advice on entrepreneurship. And so students can come in there and just have an informal conversation of what it might be like to be an entrepreneur. And yesterday in one of the breakout groups, we had an amazing idea about our group, about getting the high school students to use their volunteer hours in our local and regional organizations so they can get a better sense of those opportunities in the region. But they can also serve as youth mentors to many of our older directors and leaders in the community with their expertise in social media and technology. So let's make this a win-win and a two-way street. And finally, if we're really serious about changing the future of the Northern Peninsula and other regions across the province and across Canada, we really need collective action. It needs to be driven and started and owned here, locally or regionally. But the provincial, federal governments, the knowledge institutions like MON and CNA, and all of our community leaders from every sector need to be there to help provide guidance and support. So I will leave it there. I'm not sure how much time I have left. But
well, we have 6 minutes for questions. So
anyone have any questions?
Does anyone have any questions? You have a question?
Louise in the booth has a question.
The crab people in Norway who, okay, so they set up the industry. How did they,
how did they do all the stuff with the technology? Is that from the community? Was it the youth? Did they have marketing people come in?
The company that is running it, that's the approach that they have, is that they've R&D, or research and development, is a huge component of what they do. And they realize that with the industry, but also their location, if they're not innovative, they won't be sustainable. And so they're constantly thinking, and the person who was showing us around was actually their R&D specialist. So he was telling us all the things that they try and do on a daily basis to improve everything within the company. Jackie?
Anyone? Is it the movie The Grand Seduction? Is that the movie with the... Okay, so forget the drama for TV and all the hokey pokey. Think about the collective action of that community to reach a goal. And ever since I've been here, I can't stop thinking about the cricket on top of this mountain and everyone... you're looking at me like, what is she going? So if you've seen the movie, you I'm just trying to get your heads into collective action and what it means. This is a movie about a rural community needed a doctor. Now, they did a bunch of hokey-pokey, foolish stuff. It was a funny movie, so I'm not saying we all do that, but that's the idea of the collective action. Everybody got on board. And I think about the woman who sat behind me from the hotel next door and how she said when someone said, I'm going to come for a night, she said, no, you got to come for two or three. That's the collective action. Everybody needs to be thinking that way in the community. So think about putting powder on your big area and, I don't know, getting white clothes and dyeing clothes and going out and painting a bit of cricket. When you think about collective action, everybody needs to come together. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie.